Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Welcome to FX Podcast for Monday, March 24th, 2006, from Las Vegas.
So we're sitting here in Caesars.
Enjoying Mike Seymour's birthday, I might add.
That's right. Happy birthday, Mike.
And a big thank you to my two daughters who sent me a birthday present to have here on my birthday.
We're going to toast Mike.
This is not the sound of the present being opened, by the way.
And to Peter Webb, who was going to be here but can't.
Yes. Hello, Peter.
So, I need more lime. This is going to sound like a dig podcast.
Oh, no. You do know we're recording this the night before, not 9 a.m.
Well, actually, it is. No, it's today. It's past midnight.
Today. I just don't want people to think we're popping beers at 8 o'clock in the morning. I don't know why I don't think that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're doing podcasts every day from Las Vegas this year. We're very excited about that. And today was a big day, Autodesk Users Group meeting. Big day for a lot of our listeners, especially considering the fact that Autodesk acquired Maya last year.
Yeah, definitely some big news there.
And bigger news from FX Guide today.
Yeah, so after 6 years of having FX Guide, we've now got two websites, FX Guide and FX PhD. In fact, it's fxphd.com. And I'll be drinking every time I say FX Guide or fxphd.com during the podcast.
In favor of that.
So
I'll drink to that.
Yeah, let's drink to that. So, John, the inspiration for PhD, why did we need another website? Okay, I'll answer that question.
Jeez.
Because you're drinking. The idea with FX Guide when we started it 6 years ago was to set up tips and tricks and to share stuff amongst users. And it grew from that into something that incorporated tips and tricks. It also incorporated news and a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's been really successful. We've like over a million page views and about 350,000, I think, unique visits a month now. So we want to thank everyone for that. And it increasingly apparent from a discussion that started, actually, on our forums, that what people really wanted was real training and real theory and real development of the skills. And what tends to happen around the internet is you get random kind of tips. You'll get, like, something on Shake 1 week and then nothing for, like, 3 months. You'll get something on Final Cut and then, you know, that person will just drift off and do something else and it'll dry up. So what we decided to do was actually dedicate a whole new site to doing proper professional training. So FX PhD is a full training site. You do proper training courses in a whole range of visual effects and editing tools.
And it's not just the tools on top of that, which is interesting as well. We're gonna focus a lot on the applications, but even more so from our discussions, like Mike said, on the forums and in talking to other artists, that we're going to take a look at just general theories as well, keying that's applicable across all platforms. I mean, there are certain things you do when you composite something that applies in Shake, Toxic, Inferno, Flame, whatever.
Yeah, in fact, we've been working on this now for about 5 months. And what will happen is it's a subscription-based website. It is open today for the first day. You can go and register, and classes will start in a few weeks. And what happens is when you register and become a member of FX PhD, you become a post-grad student. and there are lecturers, or we like to call them professors, and they run courses. There are 4 terms a year, and a bunch of courses are offered. So a good example is if I enrolled as a student, I'd say, well, I want to do some courses. I look down the list. There's one mandatory course that you have to take, which is called the Background Fundamentals, and that covers theories, as John was saying. So, for example, it covers anything from keying theory to HDR to
Temport and
on-set stuff, how to light things, principles of photography and lab work. It's stuff you need to know, but it's not an application-specific problem. That's compulsory. You then have a choice of 3 courses that you can do in any one term. And do you want to give us an idea of some of the courses in term one?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be doing one of my favorites that I've enjoyed talking about over the years, and that's Introduction to Flame Expressions. And we're going to start at the ground floor of expressions from the start, telling you how to use them if you don't know how to use them, and work our way up and into really power user expressions. And what's interesting about them is they are power user expressions, but they can be very simple to use and can actually make things very easy for you in the application. And they can be used for a really large variety of things, everything from graphic design, creating objects, to compositing and using tricks to align cameras and planes within the cameras.
And what's really interesting is that picks up on some stuff we're going to talk about later in this podcast from the user group, where Flame is becoming very scriptable. And so this whole idea of expressions and scripting and stuff is really growing in Flame.
And we've also got some things like Final Cut Pro course.
Right, I was going to say it's important to say that this is not just Flame. This is not just discrete products. This is a wide range of things, and not just us. We have additional professors that have joined us in this endeavor.
People are much cleverer than we are.
Well, Final Cut, Photoshop, we're talking about a wide range.
Illustrator, 3D Max, Toxic, Shake. What am I missing?
Tools. We use more than one tool nowadays to do anything, and I mean every visual effects artist uses Photoshop. And there's tips and tricks we can
coming in later,
training we can give.
Coming in later terms, we're doing color grading with some really great professors who are actually finished up on Lord of the Rings and done some stuff there, which is great. We're really pleased to have those joining us. We're also doing stuff on combustion, which is good.
Yeah,
and fusion.
Yeah.
So,
and what's interesting, the way it works, you end up getting for each class that you enroll in. So, you know, you'll be taking up to four classes. You're going to get a 20 to 30 minute QuickTime movie that you can download each week for each class. So, you're essentially getting, you know, almost like a 2-hour DVD every week for that. But what I think is really interesting about it is that you're not just watching this DVD on your own. You know, you've got a slew of other people who are also taking the same material. So, we've got a whole set of online forums where you can discuss with the professor. Tasks or, you know, lessons that he has you do after the class. You can talk with other students about stuff that you've learned in the class. And I think it's really going to be much more interesting than doing individual-based training.
Oh, yeah. And the other thing is that let's take keying, for example. You know, we'll have a discussion about keying. Then there'll be 2K files or HD files you can download. You can then comp a shot and polish it. And what we'll then do is also give the same footage to some of the professors. So you'll get to see the professors and how they solved it. You can submit your work and say, well, I did this, and you can see some of the ideas that they come up with and how they approached it. So you get to actually have feedback, interactivity, and on top of all of this, this is professional training aimed at a job in visual effects or editing in the film, TV, or gaming industry. So we actually have a professional placement service that was on one of the podcasts recently, and those guys are setting up the Creative Job Network, a system whereby they'll be able to review work that you're doing as a student. So if you're a student and you're really excelling, you know, it's fairly likely that they will facilitate you being able to get a job at one of the top facilities around the world. So we won't employ you, but we'll help you get a job. We'll give you advice on your showreel. It's basically about taking your career to the next level. And I guess the way I think of it is that there'll be people that are just wanting to move on up in whatever job they're doing. But there could also be senior people that are like, well, when do I get time to look at stuff? And
right. I'm a Flame operator, and I really have always wanted to learn Shake. When do I have time? This gives me a jump start.
Exactly. And because you get these quick times download, like about 25 minutes to 30 minutes each, we figure that's something, you know, there'd be a render on. You can watch one. You can go through it. So you can do it weekends and nights. And you know, it's a good manageable amount spread out over the 12 weeks for each course. Next semester, a different set of courses. There'll still be some introductory courses always on offer, but each term will offer different advanced courses. So if you're in the Shake pipeline, you're looking at the Shake stuff, you might be doing advanced Shake stuff to do with keying one semester, and then the next term you might be looking at doing the Shake course that's on tracking, stabilizing, and layering compositing. So It'll be constantly changing.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it, too. And so be sure to check out that web address, fxphd.com.
Yeah.
And there's a story on the site today as well, besides this pod. Usually we put up one story at a time, but today we're adding stories about what's going on at NAB, in addition to a story about fxphd.
And the really good thing is we're going to toast. We're going
to okay, I'll drink to that.
We're going to be posting free tips on PhD the whole time. So if you want to get little video tips, there's one up there today about some new technology we just found here at the show. But yeah, there'll be new stuff, constantly free stuff on there. And then for those of you that sign up, a whole world of really well thought out, structured training.
Very cool. Well, today started out with master classes that
we didn't do.
We did not do. Yes, indeed. FX Guide Live, as you may know, the last 3 years we've done training classes here at NAB. And this year we decided to go for a bigger audience with the training site. and devote our resources to that. And
covering the NAB show as well for,
yeah,
for those of you who can't
like
make
this.
It.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've kind of ignored
it. We couldn't do last year because we were exhausted.
Yeah, exactly. We had plans to do podcasts last year and just couldn't quite handle it all with everything. It was a lot of work doing those, and we're happy to know that you're happy to hear that Discreet decided to go ahead and do those, and Jake Parker and Philippe Soro.
C. Realm. Michael Rizica.
Yeah, so they were they were very good sessions, and we're happy they... What was that?
That was my phone. Sorry.
Your phone guy?
Oh, the guy who said, turn the phones off. Oh, we'll be right back. No, we're back.
They actually did a great job.
It was
really outstanding.
I'm glad to see them continue. Yep, I think that there should be something at NAB every year that's beyond the marketing and into the just hardcore, hey, how do you do this? Here's an idea. Here's something new. It's fun.
Yep.
That's what FX Guide's about. It's what we started at.
So the big news was the user group, of course, today. So let's have a bash at the user group and giving people an understanding of what happened. And how would you sum it up? Like, what was the kind of theme for you guys?
Well, Bill Roberts started the show off pretty much with the phrase 3D everywhere. I guess a nod to the Maya acquisition, and that seems like that was stated as the theme of the demos, and all the demos were going to be tied together. And
what a brilliant segue, because I actually caught up with Bill after the show and asked him about what happened.
I think, you know, the Alias team is really interesting because one of the themes we wanted to call out tonight is 3D's everywhere. You know, and you look at our applications, it's one of the things that really makes our applications different than other people's. So bringing in that team, Alias has had such a long history of research going back to the stuff that Bill Buxton used to do, the stuff that Yost was awarded for this year at the Academy Awards. Bringing that in and combining it with the graphics work that the graphics team that is central to the to Filippo's team, and to a lot of the sort of the old school image processing guys like Benoit Belli, who are now doing some amazing work in the area of filtering. So bringing all these things together, I think the synergies are going to be pretty tremendous moving forward, and we'll see regular advances like we saw tonight, just step forwards and things that people haven't thought of before.
So one of those interoperability issues or items was 3D renderings from Maya, 3D multipass renderings from Maya being shown in Toxic. And what actually was demonstrated as a technology demo, again, as all technology demos, they have those disclaimers.
Oh, my God. Big slide of disclaimer.
This may not actually ever appear in the software. But what they did in Maya was use the render layers and actually render out separate diffuse and reflection and other passes of HDR imagery, as well as things like a luminance depth map. And it actually went out and would build a Toxic composition.
That was so cool.
Yeah, import the clips and build you the flow graph, the procedural graph, and Toxic composition that had all the layers combined with the correct blending modes and so forth as a starting point for you to do your work.
It was really great. I do a lot of compositing right now with 3D elements and, you know, diffuse passes, et cetera, and being able to pass that data directly from the 3D artist to the compositor and hopefully back the other direction eventually was just fantastic.
And it was interesting to use some of the collaboration tools and some of the versioning tools that are present in Toxic, where if they had another pass of the render that done by the 3D department, you'd see that published result, and you could quickly and easily just switch to that published result and take another take a look at another version of a rendered clip from the 3D system as well. So that was pretty interesting, I thought, as well.
I thought so, too. I thought, you know, it just really starts to show the power of the acquisition. It really, you know, the Maya working closely with Toxic, really making it a powerful pipeline.
Yeah, and it was nice. It was nice. And that demo was actually done by Martin Lee, who used to be overseeing the Flame the Flame team. And he still is on a different level, but he kind of moved over and is really concentrating on Toxic at this point. He also showed the new layer-based paint, which is going to be coming out in Toxic 2. I mean, Toxic 2007, I guess it is. And
Can I be the only one to say that's back. A lame name?
Yeah. Is that really the name?
Isn't it?
Yeah, that is really the name.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, yeah, they showed that layer-based paint, which is really was a really, really needed feature within Toxic. Showed a little use of the wiretap API, some of the stuff we talked about in our article on Toxic a couple weeks ago on the website. And also showed some technology of using some motion vector passes to create directional motion blur based
depth.
Upon motion in the scene.
Yeah, and depth too. Yeah, interesting. What did they call that node?
The modulated blur node.
Modulated.
Catchy.
I like that node, yeah.
Yeah, catchy. So after the show, we talked to a couple people about Toxic. We started out with...
Price Prethrell, who used to be creative director at Digital Domain and heck of a nice guy.
Yeah.
And then we also talked to Rob Kadza as well from Riot.
I'd love to see, I like the development in Toxic, how far it's come along. It's really starting to fill some issues. I think floating point in Flame is very, very important. And to be able to utilize facilities of floating point after all these years, it's just great to see that. And also the hardware acceleration, I think it's a big deal to see that that's in all the product lines now. And we're getting to reap the benefits of the game engines finally.
We beta tested the last round, and it was a good tool, but it was missing a lot of the artist tools. The feature set wasn't terribly rich yet, but it's come a long way, as it looked like. So, again, it looks like a whole new product to me from the last Toxic we had.
So one of the other products, of course, other than Toxic that was run through was Luster. And, what do you think? What do you think of Luster?
I thought it was impressive. And I think what was interesting was it's becoming obvious who their next target of that is going to be.
Oh, yeah.
And really I think this seems to be the broadcast and commercial market, because a lot of the stuff they focused on and talking about were things that were applicable to them,
like right.
faster processing in InfiniBand and Incinerator.
But also field-based rendering.
Field-based rendering was a big one.
Lots more real-time, and also taking one file and repurposing it for high-def, standard-def. 2K, whatever.
Exactly. Bruno Munger, who's now overseeing that development now, also showed some interesting stuff using GPUs to speed up processing, I thought.
Which was a thing that kind of appeared in a lot of the stuff tonight, wasn't it? It was the idea of GPU stuff.
Yeah, and you know, again, in there and in Flame later, which was great. But he showed five or six-layer compositive 2K still running, you know, one with some highlights, some regional color corrections, some blurs, still running at 24 frames per second, so five layers of secondaries and so forth. So that's impressive, and that is really directed to a lot of the criticisms that I've heard from colorist using, you know, the 2K or something like that, is just having to wait for render.
Was the Luster render farm, was that there before? Is that new or not?
The Incinerator?
You know, I don't know.
The Incinerator came out.
I don't know enough before. About the Incinerator, but they just shipped it, though. I mean,
right.
It's been out, but I think
I haven't used
you
it.
May.
Huh? I mean, there was Burn, of course, but I don't know that...
they used Burn before, but they're just shipping Incinerator.
Incinerator, yeah.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, you know, I think that that Luster is really interesting.
Well, the other thing was, didn't they show pulling real timelines over from Smoke?
From Smoke, definitely.
Yeah, actually, that was something they did. They Smoke to both Flame, which maintained the layers, which was awesome.
Yeah, multi-layer timeline in Flame.
And Smoke also interoperably with Luster, because it did the grade and then sent it back again, which I thought was interesting.
Right. Yes.
I just wanted to know when.
Well, actually, we also hooked up with Steve Scott after this. And Steve's a great, great colorist who works at eFilm. And they were, you know, the background of Luster. It was not a product initially developed inside Autodesk. And in the early days, a branch of it kind of split off, which is what Steve first came across. But he's done a lot of great films. And so we asked his opinion, as somebody we really respect, what he thought of Luster and the stuff he saw tonight.
Well, I think the future technologies that are being proposed as a user of a version, well, not exactly a version of Luster. We at eFilm have a proprietary bit of software that was developed by the same people who developed Luster, and they're very similar in a lot of ways. And it was very exciting to see the developments in Luster, but also the developments in Flame and the future developments that haven't come online yet. And my big hope is that the best of Flame, for example, the tracker, the keyer, will be incorporated in Luster soon.
So while we were listening to Steve, we looked up through an oracle of knowledge and actually got the lowdown on Incinerator. So apparently Incinerator, unlike Burn, isn't actually rendering stuff to disk, which you then go and check out, which is what Burn does, of course, in the background. Incinerator is the ability to render in real time, so you don't actually have to store it. It's like you hit go and it just happens in real time to the screen. And because it's in real time, as you know, and you just hit go, it's there it is. So it's actually like a foreground render accelerator, I guess, rather than a background, you know, render farm kind of concept. So shows you that I'm not a colorist, huh? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, we just talked about it, reading the smoke timelines within Lustre. So why don't we just talk about what they covered in smoke?
Yeah, let's go.
So basically, another new product manager for smoke. This time, Frederick Warren, for those of you who know. We're just mentioning these names so that you know who to talk to and who to send your email to, or you may see their name on Smoke News or Flame News, but you know who to talk to about that. But Frederick did the demo this year, and basically he showed a lot of stuff that's coming out, like being able to copy certain effects from one layer to another really easily.
You know one thing? Those guys have that like head-up display on the thing where it's all transparent. Why can't we get that on Flame?
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Actually,
like, the menu pops up, and the background's completely transparent, and you're adjusting. Like in one case, they were a key that had a guy's shirt and was changing color. But the whole UI is like overlaid and transparent, except for, of course, the color wheels themselves. I want one of those. That looks cool.
I want one.
Yeah. It's like, why can't we have that?
I think it's one of those things that they tell the fire users, well, you can't have batch.
Who's the product manager of Flame?
That is Julian.
Julian, yep. If you're listening to this, we really want that in Flame, please.
Yeah. Another new product manager.
We really want that in Flame.
But again, Frederick showed the edit desk library. It was really way improved in Smoke this time. You had list views, proxy views, reordering, dragging and dropping clips.
Nice.
Very nice. Kind of a multi-view of dual views on your edit desk as well.
Now,
which was,
I missed something, but I did see in the infrastructure demo they were talking about background wire. Now, is that in Smoke and Flame? Do we know? It was real. I'm so glad to see background wire anywhere.
Yeah, background wire.
It was in Backdraft Conform, but I never saw it shown.
Who's the product manager for background rendering and background?
Well, no, that would be
Stefan Labrie.
Yeah, okay, Stefan. So Stefan, if you can email us, we'll stick it on the site and you can clarify that.
Yeah, that you know,
it's one o'clock in the morning. Where are these guys?
It does admittedly get confusing too when you're watching.
Not sitting
this
around
stuff.
Microphones.
You don't know if it's in the current version, the upcoming version, technology demo.
I know. So that was a big thing today. Big disclaimers all over early today saying. This was all just for technology demo, and there were no timelines given, so we're talking about stuff.
You know what we can do? We can check this stuff out when we get into the booth today and
talk about it tomorrow.
Yeah, check it out.
Go ahead.
So just a shout-out that if people actually had questions about stuff,
please,
if you email us immediately, we can actually get people and answer these emails and talk to you the next day.
Don't we have an
upcoming
podcast?
And we'll mention your name on the air.
Yeah, that's right. Hey. And we'll give you a free bottle of Corona if you come to the hotel.
Yeah, somebody took her. Yeah.
Somebody nicked our Corona.
You know what Frederick showed? It was really such a welcome thing. Automatic pull-down removal.
Nice. Yeah, that was good. Because
I'm
a PAL
guy. You're a PAL guy and you really don't care.
I care because I occasionally get NTSC jobs. And I was like, oh, my God. And I phone you up and say, or I chat you and say, how do I get the 3-tail? What's the...
Was there standing applause or anything for that?
There was a lot of applause.
I did.
No, it's good. It actually worked it out, which was the nice thing. Worked it out and it pulled it out.
And they did some cool timeline rendering optimizations. It's only rendering what it needs to now as opposed to over-rendering stuff or needing to re-render when you slide stuff in the timeline. So I thought it was a nice showing from the smoke. But what was really cool was smoke-related, but definitely a Flame feature.
You mean the timeline into Flame?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's near and dear to my heart, like you would not believe.
Because that was my thing about batch timeline. Like, I don't use batch timeline because it's like one layer and I've just forever just said... The person beside me spontaneously went, yes, what's that, 10 years? I've wanted that? You know, it was like
cool. Basically what it is what happens is you load a smoke timeline into the effects product and you can open it, not just in batch, but... You can actually open it and see the layers
of
the timeline, soft effects
in the desktop player. Just open it in the player. Because that reel along the bottom of the player at the moment, I have used that from time to time, but it's slow and annoying.
Yeah.
This was fast, snappy, and really simple.
Yeah, and you can trim and slide and slip and do all that stuff to it and see the layers.
You can double-click, as I recall. You could double-click it and get into a node structure, couldn't you?
That was in batch.
Which was in batch.
Yeah. Because you have them both. You have one in player and one in batch.
Yeah. And again, in batch, you can load it in a batch. And I love when you load a clip in a batch that you've got like a 900 frame clip, but you've still got that 100 frame duration in your batch timeline. Yeah. That is so useful.
Yeah.
So, Julian.
Yeah, Julian. What the?
Welcome.
But what was really interesting was what Jeff just said about that. What you can do with that in batch is you can go in and edit effects, and you can see nodes within your batch schematic of the soft effects.
Yeah, I think the demo they showed was you called up enough. It had a bunch of soft effects and stuff on it already, and then they just added something to it, and all the other soft effects stayed in place. And
we've got a quote coming up in a middle that a minute that from a user we grabbed afterwards, but just to preempt what they were about to say, to raise it up for a second, there was a sentiment that I got at the party afterwards and stuff from people, which was, we come to NAB and there was this feeling that Flame was running out of steam because it couldn't go any further. It was never going to get past 12-bit. It was at the end of its life cycle. It was linked to SGI and that was, you know, going. And we were all going to move over to Toxic and, you know, how long would they keep Flame going? And would they even keep people in the Flame team developing the darn stuff, right? But in fact, that's not it at all, really, is it?
No. And we talked to Mark Petit also about that after the show. And they actually have expanded the development staff.
Yeah,
On the effects products and the system products. They've really made an effort to try and increase that, which I think is really good. I'm really happy about that.
I mean, it's got to be, you know, the heart and soul of the Autodesk Discrete Division of Flame. I can't imagine it without it.
I use a bunch of different applications myself, but I have to admit, when I come back to Flame, I feel very comfortable and at home in that product. It's such a great compositing program.
I think you probably use a lot more After Effects than I do, but I use Shake and Flame, and I use them for two different things because they do different things.
Right.
But if I have to put stuff together, a whole lot of clips, and it's a jumble and I've got a mess, and I just like, from this, sort something out, oh my God, I just can't imagine working without a Flame.
Yeah.
It's just the way to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Are we allowed to say what you're doing at the moment?
Sure.
So Jeff's hardcore features, and has been now for a while. You were doing commercials.
I've been at Hydraulics in Santa Monica for over a year now, working mostly on features, commercials.
But it's a miracle that we even got you here to Vegas because you're finishing.
Yeah.
We have to say. Yeah, fuck it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I think so.
Yeah. You're finishing X-Men 3, right?
X-Men 3, we just finished
And
that,
you've
yes.
done Fog, and you've done, you know, Flux, and you've done a whole lot of stuff. Right?
And Flux. Yeah, we did. It's been a very busy year.
Yeah.
And a good year.
Of that has been Hardcore Flame.
Hardcore Flame. Lots of working closely with the 3D department. Lots of creating effects on the fly. It's been
And that's all
great.
Cineon, basically 2K workflow?
Some 2K. Mostly 2K. Some 4K. Some shows have been 4K. But yeah, Hardcore Flame. You know, you haven't
tight deadlines.
Tight deadlines.
Very complex
turn
shots.
It around quickly. Revise things quickly. Very... and you know, I certainly,
and lots of burn.
Lots of burn. We have the world's largest burn farm, I'm proud
to
say.
Hydraulics is a really good company. But I cut you off. You're about to mention something before we...
Oh, I was going to say that the other thing in the demo that we saw that was, you know, they introduced 3D tracking, automatic 3D tracking into Flame back. And it's been great. But, you know, I found myself having to do, you know, proxy, like take it down to 720 by 46 to do a track, because trying to track a 2K was a painful, slow experience and generally resulted in me going to Buju, calling the Buju guys up and saying, hey, can you track this? This was as fast as what they showed anyway.
Yeah.
Was very
like,
fast.
It was almost like real time.
It was like the 2D track.
It was almost faster than he could explain it.
Yeah. And here's the really interesting thing. They had some clips from Fast and Furious Tokyo
Drift.
Yeah. The promo, I mean, the trailer looks good, but anyway, there were some aerial shots over Tokyo, and they also showed the tracker with the scripting. So what happens is you turn on script, a bit like the old Apple script. It records what you're doing, and in this case, it went into action, set up the clip to do a 3D track, pressed one button, it kind of did it, got out and saved it, of course, and got out to the desktop. Then that script was then run on any clip in the bottom reel. So you add a line to the script that says process bottom reel, and it went through just bang, 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 taking every single clip, which were all aerial shots, you know, from above, loaded it into action, did the 3D track immediately, saved it into the action library, immediately went back to the desktop, grabbed the next one, and just kept on going. And as John said, he was trying to articulate that to the audience so he could get some applause, and the thing's kind of moving so fast. By the time he kind of got to explaining the whole thing had finished.
Yeah.
Well, I had many people, a couple of people, I should say, after the thing say that they swore that was pre-canned, that there was no way that was being done live, because it was that fast.
Yeah,
I was sitting up the front, and I could see it ticking over.
Yeah,
and it's,
it was definitely happening in real.
Yeah, it was doing it.
Real time.
Yeah,
but...
Yeah, good to see that Python-based scripting.
What was that machine? Did anyone get the specs on what they were running?
It was definitely Linux.
Linux-based Flame.
Right, but is it like...
I didn't
know what it was.
No, the current shipping one.
All right, so it's not a tricked-up mega one that's only available to people with, you know, infinite bank accounts. Okay, well, that's good. That looked good.
Infinite bank.
You know, the other thing that I liked, and I'm just a... I just love these. It's the almost... amazingly fast rack defocus. And I hate it when people blur things and it just muddies the picture.
It's obnoxious.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And so for years I was using Carl's Sapphire one. Right. That did a nice rack defocus. Yep, sure. But this sucker was just flying, wasn't it?
Yeah, very fast. And you could also you could adjust contrast on it, which really made for nice effects, the way that they the highlights came through. And the shape of the...
I saw that too, yeah. You
know, yeah.
But it was a circular one or a kind
hexagonal. Yeah, it was very nice. It was very pretty. And was that the part where they showed it was tied to depth of field too? They also showed depth of field stuff going on?
Well, okay, that's the only one that I was less like... I guess, you know, Shake's like done that for years. I was like, yeah, well, okay. Give me a Z-map depth and then do depth of field based on it. It's like, okay.
Right, right.
But
you could point to the area of the screen where you wanted the focus to be, and I was kind of like, okay.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, hey, more tools, bring them on.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of cool stuff. Even in batch timeline, I just remember they did burn timeline segment.
Oh,
so you
yeah.
can do just a segment in your timeline and burn. You don't need to send it back. It just burns, automatically updates your timeline like happens in Smoke.
In Smoke, that was a very effective demo. Yeah. It was actually playing the clip and editing it, and it was still coming in with frames.
And now you've got that, or hopefully someday, if you believe that
this thing.
When the technology. Yeah, that'll happen in the batch timeline as well. So I thought
that
was pretty
cool. So we grabbed a couple of flame artists on the way out and stopped them from having cocktails and asked them what they thought.
Yeah, it was. We spoke with Galvin Milkovich also, and then we went back to also Rob Cadzo, who's an engineer.
This year was great because it looked to me like Autodesk hadn't just sat on their laurels and said, you know, okay, we have a very polished product that we're not going to do anything to, and it's going to run its course, which I keep, to be honest with you, I've thought that for quite a few years, that it's on its last... You know, it's like, what's going to happen next? But this was great. They showed the GPU, which was fantastic. The fact that they also talked about it not just being on SGI and thinking about, you know, advanced, you know, hardware, which was... That was a big issue, the fact that, you know, where is it going to go? Even a smaller thing like the fact that you can uncolor clamp something and actually be, you know, playing around with, you know, a much higher bit depth color space, which was great. You know, so there was a lot of little things that... Again, I'm trying to recap a technology demonstration, which I'm hoping actually gets into the product. But yeah, if it does, I think the product's got a lot more legs. It's fantastic.
That was great. Saw lots of actually useful tools. HDR and Flame is huge for us, and then also wiretap integration with all the other products, read and write. Yeah, I mean, I think that was probably the most impressive. Some of the new GPU tools, obviously.
So we were just talking before the guys made those good points about the fact that we're on Linux, of course, which was another point I think we sort of skipped over a little. Yeah, because like I connected up with Dave Sampson, who's actually just Autodesk LA office. He's a great guy, good tequila drinker, and
an old friend of ours.
Great friend and good supporter of FX Guide. But he had some really interesting things to say when we pointed out the shift now, which is really in everything.
I started at Discrete in 95 and went through the Autodesk acquisition in 99. And when I started in 95, SGI was, quote, going out of business then. And that was our biggest concern, is that we really only had one vendor that could supply that type of hardware that did those jobs. So it's refreshing now to give a customer a choice. And even... Until you could deliver a choice to the customer, they always thought you were giving them a line one way or the other. And now we can at least deliver a choice. Whichever the client wants, you know, whichever way he wants to go, he can.
Well, the future, again, Linux, and that also leads to future technology stuff. And they have a new image science group that they formed at Autodesk. And that's led by Filippo Tamperi, who is leading the Toxic project. They've really been hitting the ground running for the last 6 to 9 months, just focusing on image science technology. And
you know, this is what we were begging them for this, weren't we?
Yeah, and it maybe wasn't true. Again, we have actually talked a lot about this on FX Guide, even with Marc Petit about it, that we felt there's at least this perception of this kind of leaving that behind
I was definitely a heavy critic. I was like, you know, after the Master Kia, where was the last big image processing type technology improvement? And I guess their comeback was, well, they had to port everything to different processors.
And it was interesting. And they formed this group in merging with some of the Alias folks, in Toronto. But what was interesting, it kind of explains some of that, kind of what happened. And what was happening with all the group in Montreal was they'd work on these things, and then these engineers would get pulled into a current release or a current feature to try and fix something, fix bugs, or add a feature. And this new image science stuff would get put on the shelf for a little while. and then they maybe come back to it later. So they're having some problems doing this. And now what they've got is they've got a dedicated group to try and get these things to out faster and more efficiently, which I think is really, really great news.
So let's run what all they whipped through a few things.
Yeah, they did. They whipped through a few things. And what was interesting is they said very much this was technology showing, but they also said it's available to any of the product groups. This wasn't like stuff that's only going to go into toxic or wouldn't be allowed in one of the other products. Seemed like it was up for anyone that could put it into their product and make it work.
Yeah, and you mentioned talking about leaving SGI behind. And one of those aspects that they're doing is, I think the first showing maybe they showed last year, but I can't remember. But they really showed a lot of GPU processing stuff within Flame,
which was quite impressive. That whole idea of just taking the games engine and just thrashing it, I think was great.
Yeah, I mean, took like 4K was a good example, Jeff, right?
Yeah.
No, you know, it was an extended by cubic.
Yeah, that's right.
An extended by cubic, then lit it with lights, 4K, and then was moving it in real time with the lights changing on it, with a color correction on it.
Yeah, like and, a color warper downstream.
And viewing a downstream color warper in context while manipulating the action setup.
Yes. And it really was. It was like having a PAL thing on Onyx 2. It just moved in real time.
It was amazing. And then they switched off the GPU, and the only way you could really move it was to type in a number because it was so slow. So.
And another interesting thing, paint, I thought, was interesting. It's actually using the same paint engine that's in there now, but they showed also kind of a merger of raster-based and vector-based paint as well, which I thought was interesting.
I kept on wanting to put my hand up and say, what about auto paint? Remember that, no one's touched it for like a decade?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I could actually draw a line and then change redrawing it.
And I thought the vector and raster-based and the ability to, change your brush. Basically, you paint a blue stroke and you're able to change it to a red stroke with a totally different brush and change the path. But quite frankly, the most amazing feature was rotating the paint canvas and painting on it.
I even Photoshop. I totally want that. I mean, that's got to come
that was in Painter, I think, wasn't that the first place I ever saw it?
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I've done that. You have a natural arc with your wrist that's a convex arc, and it's really hard to draw a concave arc with the wrist action, so you just flip the thing around. And it was fast, and it was interactive, and that was good. But I guess there was probably, seven or eight things they showed?
Blurs made a reappearance again. They showed last year, but showed camera defocus, fast Gaussian blurs, D-grain module.
Oh, with motion estimation. Yeah,
so nice. Now that was interesting, because that was no longer a temporal, a spatial solution. It was a temporal solution.
Yeah.
I'm
so glad to see that because so many D-grain solutions are so
ringy,
horrible,
and
softening and destructive. And this looked like it had potential. It's hard to tell in a demo on a projector, but it'd be good to get the hands on and play with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So we spoke to two, just to finish up. We're going to speak to two people from Autodesk in R&D and in marketing.
Yeah, Mark Petit. Who's kind of the head of the R&D department, and also Bill Roberts, who's product management for, I think, 2D applications is what they said. But anyway, just two really heads up guys at a high level there.
So he put it to them that that maybe there'd been some issues, maybe that it was good to see that image processing group back again, and because, genuinely needs to be something that Autodesk focuses on, new innovations in the raw tools, not just workflow and databases. And this is what they had to say.
So to be fair to the team, we had to stomach some pretty significant changes, PC port, multi-res and everything. So now I think those big stressful architectural changes in the package are behind us, and effectively we can focus a lot of our energy on tools, on image processing, on 3D, and on workflow. So you've seen a lot of work there. So yeah, we're really looking forward for the next couple of years because there's a lot of advanced in the field of high dynamic range imagery, motion-enabled tools that will really help us, do a lot of innovative, cool stuff. And we have the team to do it. We have an amazing pool of talent.
There's been so many have-to-do things in the past few years in terms of getting the platforms supported that we need to have to be ongoing with the creative tools on top of that. So being able to call out the research team, being able to have a team of a scope that's large enough, as Filippo Tampiari mentioned, that can continue ongoing research. So research that may take 2 years to come to fruition, but keep that rolling and still be able to inject it into releases on a timely basis.
Tell me, just how does the 3D Max and Maya stuff, now that you've had a few months to get under your belt, how have they connected up?
Well, they're just starting to connect up. I think, you know, the first thing we showed tonight was a 2D layer-based integration with Toxic utilizing the database. As we start to look at the year ahead, this year is a year all about connectivity. So we're going to lean very heavily on FBX. I know to the Flame users, you know, we say FBX and they're really not so excited, but we're going to go back, revisit that, and make sure that FBX is a real 3D transport layer between 3D applications and also between compositing and editing applications as well as the modeling and animation themselves. Inside the modeling and animation realm, we're going to first of all concentrate on passing scenes back and forth. Step one, maybe you may have a rigged character and you pass it across and it's available in the opposite application as like a mesh. But next year we'll start moving into passing across full behaviors so that if you had a character who had full IK, you'd be able to actually adjust it. If you created in Max, adjust it in Maya, or vice versa.
One of the things that you've done in your workflow is you've taken 3D into 2D. My question is this. Do you see a role in 3D putting stuff together, obviously to a point, handing it to a compositor who does all the keying and live action integration, but then handing it back to the 3D guy to tweak those shaders in the context of the live action composite, and maybe not having the 2D guy finish the shot, but the 3D guy do it?
Yeah, I think this is the thing that's out there, because generally if you look at the process, for the most part, people are going to rely on a renderer like, you know, Mental Images to render the final images. You know, so as you start to think about process, they may want to end up in that space for their rendering. So I don't think we want to come out and say there's one right way or one wrong way to do it. One of the things we do want to do is we want to start taking the same view and making it available to the compositor. So one of the things we are going to start working on is taking the Maya camera and embedding that directly in the application, such as Toxic, so you can actually have the same look at. That would allow you then identical controls, identical look, and then you could actually pass it back to Maya for final rendering. Because the main reason we see compositing being so integral to 3D today is the 3D scenes are becoming so complex, you want to bring them together in a more simplistic, more controlled manner in something like a Toxic, but ultimately the final rendering is still like a separate process.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested to see what happens in the future with that stuff, so that'll be good.
Me too. And, you know, I got to admit that Sunday at NAB is always, I've always really enjoyed the users group meeting, look forward to it every year, and seeing old friends too at the cocktail party afterwards as well.
And we got a great reaction to PhD.
I think so, too. Yeah. It was really nice, the reaction that people got to it. We're really excited about it.
Yeah, heaps of people were saying that they really wanted some structured training that they could relate to and covered a wide range of stuff, but, you know, remained.
What's
on.
What's that web address again? Yeah. fxphd.com.
Yeah, not that we're not going to have a million links on the site.
Yeah, there'll be a story.
But check it out, because there'll be stuff going up constantly over the next 2 weeks. Classes start May 15th. Registration before then, and you'll be getting daily BitTorrent downloads for the courses that you're on.
Feel free to ask questions in the forum. Once you sign up the forum, you'll be able to post in them, so feel free to ask us questions.
And also stuff about the show. Like if you're going, I really want to hear about the Red camera or something, I've been able to find anything, send us an email. We'll immediately go down, talk to the people, and can ask them the questions you asked us. You know, we'll put it straight to them if we can get to them, which will be good. And
yeah, and again, every day we'll be doing a podcast, our podcast tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow we're going to actually be talking to Apple directly and asking them a bunch of questions. We've actually been doing stuff with Apple, and we'll be discussing that, some DVDs that we've produced for them. And we'll also be doing some stuff on camera technology tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Day after that, podcast 3, we'll be doing roundtable, right?
Yeah, we'll be doing a round. That's actually tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow as well? Okay, yeah. Well, that's
good. It's going to be packed. We'll see how it ends up. But these are just subjects we'll be covering during the week also. We've got conversations lined up with some Autodesk folks, Chris Viano and Philippe Suero.
Oh, we've also got, I think Filmlight and Pixel Farm and
Ion.
Yeah, Diffusion guys.
Yeah.
So
check in every day. Again, we're trying to just provide a little slice of NAB for those of you who can't be here.
Yeah, it's really cool when we get emails from people. So
yeah, please let us know what you'd like to hear about, or if you had a question about something we talked about tonight, because, you know,
we got wireless set up in the hotel and we're ready to rock. Yeah,
exactly.
And and thanks to everybody that's been a part of the last 6 years. We look forward to the next six with both sites. Just to reiterate that the second site is in no way detracting from FX Guide. No way FX Guide is going to shut down or anything. FX Guide is going to continue. It's like
it's actually enabling
size.
Us to continue.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So both sites will be really strong moving forward. Well, that's I think it for tonight. It's about 1 or 2 a.m. And it's my birthday.
It is your birthday. Happy birthday,
once
Mike.
Again. How many times can I get that in?
Let's sign off and I'll drink to that.
Okay. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX Podcast. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2006 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide LLC.